Hoe kan jouw organisatie verbeteren? Hoe zorg je voor collega's die gelukkiger zijn? En hoe geef je zelf vorm aan je carrière? Je hoort het allemaal op het podcastkanaal New Business Radio Work. Met wetenschappelijke inzichten en de beste praktijkvoorbeelden. Check je favoriete podcastplatform en abonneer je op New Business Radio Work.
Let's Talk Business wordt mede mogelijk gemaakt door baas.nl.
Het begint altijd met een idee. Een klein idee dat leidt tot iets groters. Een groot idee dat je maar niet loslaat. En dat gouden idee dat een sector op zijn grondvesten doet schudden.
Dit is New Business Radio.
Het radiostation dat verslag doet van bijzonder ondernemerschap.
Ondernemende mensen, inspirerende gesprekken, innovaties en duurzaamheid.
Dit is New Business Radio.
Van hippe start-up tot ijzersterke multinational.
Iedereen praat mee.
Dit is New Business Radio.
Let's Talk Business.
Hello and welcome. My name is Fabienne de Vries and you're listening to a new episode of Let's Talk Business, the program in which entrepreneurship, companies and the people behind it are featured. My guest for today is Jim Cox, Area Vice President of Proofpoint Benelux. Proofpoint is a leading cybersecurity company that protects organizations' greatest assets and biggest risks, namely their people. Today we will dive into the current cyber threat landscape and learn about their unique people-centric approach to protection. So stay tuned for this hour of Let's Talk Business.
Dit is New Business Radio.
Yes, and we're back with Jim Cox of Proofpoint. Welcome.
Thank you, Fabienne.
Thank you for being here. Almost 7 years at the company and almost 3 years as a vice president. What makes this field of work so exciting for you?
That's a great question, Fabienne. I think that it's an easy answer for me because when we do what we do every day, which is protect people from the most nefarious threat actors around the world and their organizations, their brands, it's a noble cause. We feel good about getting up every day and doing that, and that's what we do.
It's like a comic hero feeling, maybe.
Well, I certainly enjoy it, and certainly it keeps me fresh. And
you're not Batman, but good man.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe the man in black. So there is a lot of work to be done as it comes down to the cybersecurity. And what was your vision when you started as a VP at Proofpoint three years ago?
Well, what I would say is the background of the cybersecurity business has changed dramatically over the years, and today, the biggest threat that's facing organizations today are their people. Mm-hmm. Their people are under attack, and so what we're seeing from a landscape perspective is that the bad actors have figured that out, and they're constantly figuring out ways to reach the people in an organization to have them do their bidding for them.
Yeah, so that is actually the biggest change over the years, that it's not about the infrastructure that they target, but their people.
That's correct. Yeah. That's correct, Fabienne. You know, we've seen, organizations over the, at the beginning of the computer age, let's say, 25, 30 years ago, they were able to build, castles with big walls and moats around the castles and protect their organizations with, very sustainable systems. But that's all changed. Mm-hmm. The bad guys just go right into the people that are inside those castles. So the walls don't matter. And by the way, the people aren't in the castle anymore.
So if you're in the firewall business, that is useless. Not useless, but it's not the only way to protect.
That's a better way to put it, for sure, because they, layered protection is what's important. But as I just started to mention, the people in an organization don't sit in the castle anymore because mm-hmm. we're all working from home. We're in hybrid work environments, and that probably won't change anytime soon because of, the return to work, because it's absolutely the new model, and the bad folks know this, and they're after the people that, where they work.
Yeah. So what is the biggest damage if you take it back to a couple of years ago and compare it to now? How are companies damaged by this kind of approach?
Well, it evolves. It evolves all the time. But, as we've seen the news right now, one of the biggest threats that organizations around the world face, and here in the Netherlands, it's actually 7 out of 10. It's estimated that 7 out of 10 cyber attacks are ransomware related.
And ransomware means that they ask money, they threaten you to, and then you have to pay them off.
Exactly. Or lose your data, or lose your brand protection. We've seen it just recently with a media organization.
So it's blackmail.
Exactly. It's a form of blackmail, and frankly, it works. It works with organizations of all size. We've seen just down the street, you know, a sister media organization paid 8,500 euros in ransomware, I think in September, mm-hmm. in order to maintain access to their and retain access to their systems. Probably the worst ransomware attack that happened in the Netherlands was large university in the southern part of the country that had over 250,000 euros was spent to retain their data. But not only did they lose the money, but they also lost time. Their students weren't able to go to class. They lost data, and they, of course, lost brand reputation. So it's a threat that continues to be the most concerning to organizations in the Netherlands and around the world.
Yeah, so what cyber risk have been maybe introduced or heightened through the mass migration to hybrid working?
Yeah, that's a great question because, you know, all of us are, you know, as workers, we've all moved to our home office environment. Whether we were working from home part-time or not, now we're there almost all the time. We're working on our own devices, sometimes personal devices. Sometimes we're working from unsafe connections. So that's obviously one component. The other component is we're not working with, you know, the company applications that are protected in the company data center. We're working on cloud applications. And these cloud applications are prolific now. So almost all of the work that's happening today is much different than even 2 to 3 years ago. And yeah, that shift is happening.
Exactly. Everybody's shifting to clouds, exactly. Cloud working. Why is that specifically more dangerous or more vulnerable, actually, for this kind of threat actors?
Well, it's cloud applications aren't necessarily more dangerous. In fact, cloud providers, and you know the names, the Amazons, the Googles, the Microsofts, they're inherently secure organizations. But there's cloud applications are prolific, and so they're being, you know, more and more applications are being used every day by people. And sometimes they're using ones that aren't approved by the company. So that's always a challenge. But the other component is that those cloud applications can be compromised. So as soon as an application is compromised and a user is compromised, then the bad actor becomes the user, and they're trusted within their organization, so they can do all kinds of bad activity within the organization. Because
so they infiltrate.
They infiltrate that way, exactly. And this is one of the things that's also on the minds of organizations around the world, and specifically in the Netherlands. In fact, we did a survey, and it's the number one concern of Dutch CISOs, we'll call it, which is, of course, chief information security officers. The number one concern is supplier risk, because the suppliers that they work with can be compromised, and that, of course, leads to their own security challenges.
Yeah, and you don't want to think bad of your suppliers. You want to give them the feeling that you trust them anyway, but there could be a bad apple in between.
That's right. In fact, just a few months ago, it was announced that one of the, you know, Bol.com suffered from a 750,000 euro payment that they made, which was business email compromise. I can explain that. But they made that payment to a fake supplier.
Wow.
And that fake supplier is a real supplier. They supplied garbage cans to Bol.com, and they were owed 750,000 euros. But it wasn't that supplier. That supplier had been compromised. And of course, Bol.com had no way of knowing that. Transfer the funds to a fake bank account, a different
bank
account.
Exactly. So you've got so many magicians pretending to be someone you know.
That's right. In fact, the reason why organizations are worried about this is because that garbage can manufacturer, it's a small business.
Mm-hmm.
It's a small business that doesn't have the same, you know, security protocols, security precautions, probably doesn't have the staffing to handle that. And they're an easy target for the bad guys.
Yeah, because not every company has a CISO.
Very true. In fact, CISO, the title CISO has really only been around for the last 6 to 7 years.
Yeah.
And in the Netherlands, I think even shorter than that.
So I was spoofed this morning, ladies and gentlemen. We have to talk about that. I got this, well, actually twice. One real, coincidentally, and one was done by Proofpoint, turned out to be. Luckily, I was awake enough. Now, the first one was from the IRS. It was an SMS text. And it says that I had to pay, and otherwise they would get a a tax collector or a debt collector at my door. And I can imagine that people, I mean, this really gets under people's skin.
It's emotional.
Yes, on this level. And then later on, I opened my email and I got from my former school an invitation to come and speak about my career. And well, alumni were invited for an open day, et cetera, et cetera. But luckily, I recognized, of course, your name on top of the email. So I was like, okay, I have to ask you later on, were you the one, was Proofpoint proving something? And
I think we proved the point.
You proved the point completely. So, but there was a link in it to apply, and it was actually so innocent and ego. I don't know how do you say ego strelend.
it tapped into your ego.
It tapped into my ego.
You wanted to click because you were.
I was honored.
It offered you an honorable thing to come speak at the university that you previously attended.
Exactly.
Because you've had a very nice career, and wouldn't the students be interested in hearing from you?
Exactly. So how did you do that?
It was simple. We spoofed that email. We looked like we came from your school, and all I did was insert my name, a fake title. We copied the insignia for the university in our signature line, so it looked even more realistic. And then we sent it.
There were
anybody can do it.
Yeah. Before I ask what would have happened if I clicked the link, there was one thing, and maybe we should talk about where to look for in these kind of emails to protect yourself, because there, many ways. But one of the things was that the logo of my school wasn't that clear, wasn't that high resolution, not a high resolution.
Good catch.
And another thing was that normally there is, I don't know how to call that, but there's also the website of the school under the logo or some other disclaimer kind of a sentence. And that was lacking as well.
So what you noticed, thankfully, because you actually took the time to look at that, you noticed some of these discrepancies, and perhaps you haven't had security awareness training, but you were smart enough not to click on that link. By the way, that link was a good link. You wouldn't have had anything happen to you if you clicked it. So we weren't going to get you in trouble. However, what you did is fairly uncommon. You put some thought into it. You thought about the links that were there. You thought about the makeup of the email. And one of our goals as an organization is to help people around the world be more resilient to these types of attacks.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what needs to happen. But I will say one thing. I did a check yesterday because I'm in preparation for this interview. Not only is your former school not protected from that, but almost every organization, every school in the Netherlands, and top 10 universities, there's only one. And I'll call them out because I think they've done a good job, is at the University of Amsterdam.
Yes.
They've protected, but the rest are not there yet. And they're all subject to this type of activity. By the way, I don't want to call up just universities. It's true for organizations around the Netherlands.
So the University of Amsterdam is protected, but how do they do that? I mean, if my former school was protected, you couldn't have searched for my email address?
No. In fact, it's very easy to find information about you. So I played the part of a bad actor. Mm-hmm. I Googled you. I went to your LinkedIn and I found out a slight bit of information about. I went to your website, got your email address, and I learned a little bit about where you went to school. That's all I did. And the bad act, and it took me literally 3 minutes to find
exactly
all of that information.
Yeah.
Then we sent the spoofed email. The bad actors do the same thing, but they do it at scale.
Mm-hmm.
And they will target individuals who, don't take this the wrong way, might be ego-driven for something like that. But they also they'll target individuals who have access to funds, money,
mm-hmm.
and got some great stories about the world that certain people live in because they're targets.
But how could my university have protected themselves
for this? Very good question. And the University of Amsterdam is an example. They've taken steps to do this. So our friends over there, and we have good friends over there. We applaud them for that. I would say the number one, not to get technical here, but the number one thing they can do is to explain to the rest of the world that they're not open for spoofing. Mm-hmm. And there's a technical, you know, protocol for that, and it exists. That protocol has to be adopted by organizations around the world so that the bad actors can't spoof them. So simply, a bad actor, whether they live in Russia, the Netherlands, the United States, Nigeria, when they go to spoof your former school, they see that it's open for spoofing. It's okay. Open for yeah. fraud.
So they can protect themselves by some technical
and that email
setting.
Yes, exactly.
That maybe the logo and the name, that it doesn't work together or something.
Well, what would happen is that email got delivered to you by your email service provider.
Yes,
you know, Gmail perhaps. Gmail will drop the email because they'll say, Google will drop the email saying, "Hey, this school is protecting themselves." So University of Amsterdam's spoofed email will never reach the intended target. So it's a protocol that's world known, but it's not widely adopted.
Yeah. Another thing was with the SMS I got, that there was not a, I'm discussing this because I want to warn people, not a logo in the, I don't know, how do you say that? The offsender? The sender, yeah. You have also the picture mm-hmm. next to your mm-hmm. Message, and there was none. So is that also a sign?
Yes. In fact, what organizations around the world, and the Netherlands is starting to do this in mass as well. We know that users need to be trained on what not to click and what signs to look for. And you found one. You were. I don't know that you've. Like I said, I don't know that you've taken training, but you're acting as if you. You're resilient, you're vigilant against these attacks, and more organizations need to do this. So you've done the right things on those two messages today. I just wanted to show how easy it is.
Did you do the other one as well?
No.
Okay.
No, I did not.
Okay. Later on, we're going to talk about the human factor report and the results from that.
Van hippe start-up tot ijzersterke multinational. Iedereen praat mee op New Business Radio.
Yes, so human behavior is crucial when it comes down to cybersecurity and threats. If we look at the world now, it's a big, big business. Some really bad guys are earning millions, billions of money, dollars and money with it. Who's in the lead at this moment?
That's a great question. If I was to say the majority of the security teams that I talk to, they always feel like they're playing catch up.
Exactly.
It's they're a cat always, and mouse. They're always behind because the bad actors consider a new way to penetrate, attack, a new form. And we saw this with the pandemic. During the pandemic, Proofpoint threat researchers saw an uptick in threats that spoofed the WHO, World Health Organization, said things about vaccines that were, you know, sent messages to people that were, you know, causing fear.
Yeah.
And were, of course, you know, reaching into that human, you know, component that made them click or made them do something that they shouldn't do. And that the bad actors are just very good at that. They prey on our human weaknesses.
Why would people walk that path?
There's money to be made. And a lot of it, and it's easy.
That's the only motivation? Or is it power, domination?
Years ago, I would say, I'm going to go 10 years ago, there was hacktivists. There was a component of the hacker community, if you will, that were doing it for purposes of, you know, proving a point to an organization. And that still exists to some extent. But more and more, it's just about money. There's nation state actors, the really bad ones that are run out of nations you would expect, you know, that have purposes of stealing intellectual property or stealing state secrets. Those are the big things. And the organizations in the Netherlands that are worried about that, you know who they are, right? They're the representative on the AEX, and they're absolutely vigilant about that. Mm-hmm. It's the organizations that don't have nation state actors after them. They just have a guy in a you know, sitting in his couch who is doing some social engineering and just trying to pick off 8,500 euros.
Exactly.
And that happens. They do it successfully multiple times a week. They're very wealthy.
Wow. So there was a human factor report this year. What was it about?
Proofpoint, we issue a human factor report every year in the spring because we want to, you know, call attention to the fact that this is the new perimeter of security. Because organizations, as I mentioned, the castle and moat motif, or, you know, a visual, if you will, organizations used to think of security as, you know,
castle walls.
Yeah. How do I put bigger walls up or dig a deeper moat or whatnot? But we want to call attention to the fact that that worlds change. The bad actors have moved on from that, as we said, and they're after human frailty, human vulnerabilities. And so the people have become the new perimeter.
Yeah, you have to think inside out instead of outside in.
Exactly. Yeah. In fact, whether they're in the, you know, perimeter, excuse me, inside the building, which not many of us are anymore, we're working from locations everywhere, they're the targets.
Yeah. So human behavior is one of the most difficult things to change or to make aware of. Who has the responsibility in this one? Is it the board, managers, or the CISOs?
I think that's a great question, and it does give me a chance to, you know, say this about the boards of directors in the Netherlands are people that run the businesses. Your CISOs, your security teams need you. Now they're not feeling supported by you. In fact, we did a survey, and only 21% of CISOs in the Netherlands felt that the board really understood the security problem.
Yeah.
So that needs to change.
Yeah, they're lonely. They're like, okay, they expect me to protect the thing, but I need from higher up.
Exactly. 45% of those CISOs said that they think the expectations are too high.
Yeah.
And they're too high based on the resources they have, the money they receive, the staffing that they have.
And it's also because the board or managers still think in infrastructure safetiness.
You know, it's a very interesting statistic. We know that almost 90%, over 90%, and we redo this statistic every year. In fact, Verizon Data Breach Report, it's world renowned as the report that calls out credible statistics. Thousands and thousands of people are surveyed. Over 90% of breaches, security breaches, start with an email. Start with an email that, like you received this morning. Mm-hmm. And yet, you're right. Majority of the spending, well over 70% of the spending for security, is going into the old castle walls, if you will.
Yeah. So what other results came up out of the report?
Well, I will, you know, I'll actually refer to one that's a little more close to home. We did a survey of Dutch security leaders. And I think that, you know, we published some results in some really, really nice publications around the Netherlands. But really interesting that, you know, the CISOs, the chief security officers in the Netherlands, they're very concerned. They feel like, let me just pull up a statistic here. 62% of CISOs in the Netherlands feel that this year, the next 12 months, they're going to be targets of a serious threat.
So they don't sleep really well.
They don't sleep really well. And in fact, we actually brought up one of the threats that they feel they're going to get is from a supplier. And the next most credible threat that they feel like they're going to get is business email compromise. Now, business email compromise is what you received this morning from me, mm-hmm. you know, spoofing you. And then the third one they're worried about because this move to cloud is cloud account compromise. So all of these components are people-centric, right? Yep. They're related to the human factor. The human has to do something. In fact, it's close to 100%. It's in the high 99% of almost all of cybersecurity breaches need a human to do something.
So what steps can CISOs take to ensure more of a people-centric security approach?
One of the things that Dutch CISOs are really thinking about and doing more and more is they're training their people. So mm-hmm. we talked a little bit about training earlier, but I will call out the fabric or the training initiatives that we see. They're not they're not the right ones. So let me explain that. If I was a person in an organization and I received a mandatory cybersecurity training once a year, I went through and I accomplished that. I checked the box. Maybe I was drinking a cup of coffee. Maybe I didn't even sit and watch it, but I completed it. Is that enough to secure the organization? Is that enough to give that person, you know, help them be more resilient? And the answer is no.
Why not?
It's just, it's a check the box. It's an exercise that perhaps looks like it's a good thing to do, but it really is not enough. So what we're seeing is organizations more and more are figuring out, how do I train the right people, the people that need it the most, and how do I train them with the right content at the right time? So an example, let's say you clicked on that link this morning and we were sending that message to you to see what you would do, mm-hmm. and you clicked on the link. Then we would say, okay, Fabienne needs to have a little more training along this area. So how do we warn her about malicious links? How do we give her more attention? And so I'll give you some attention in 30 days again. I'll come back to you with that. And then perhaps if you do it again, then I might have to do something else to actually expand the controls for you, because let's call you a happy clicker. Uh-huh. And organizations
I'm
have
such
that.
A happy clicker.
But those exist. So what we see are organizations, if they train their whole company one time per year, it just doesn't address those components.
But then it seems easy, just do a lot of tests in different ways.
Yes, but that gets tiresome. That gets tiresome to the employee community. They start to ignore those things. They start to not, it doesn't have the intended effect. So what we do is we want to help organizations figure out really who are the most vulnerable people, who are the ones that get the most attacks, who are the ones that have access to, you know, important data, because that's really what the bad guys are after. They want credentials, they want the assumed credentials, they want access to data or money.
Yeah, so what exactly do you do when you're working with customers to help them to tackle these types of attacks?
Well, I did mention, you know, let's do some targeted training that's really good for people. That's one thing. But let's just stop the bad stuff from getting in the front door to begin with. Mm-hmm. Let's protect the email that people have. Let's not give the people in your organization, you know, the chance to click.
So
let's just stop it.
Yeah, exactly. So one is the human behavior, and secondly is to implement DMARC. Is that?
Yes. On the break, I did mention that DMARC is what your former school should implement, mm-hmm. in order to do. So that's one component. That's one component. And again, not to be technical, but that would give your school the chance to, they would be able to make sure that they're not spoofed by bad actors. However, bad email is still going to come in. Bad email will still come into your former school, and it will still reach users that can click or give away their credentials. So we have to stop that email from getting into the first place. And that's why in the U.S., more than 80 of the Fortune 100, so that's a large number.
That's a large number, yeah.
Are protected from, we protect them, all the email they receive. So they've come to rely on the fact that they just don't want to live with bad email getting into their users. And that's how we address the big problem to begin with.
And is that through software, or what does Proofpoint do literally?
Yes. In fact, not only do we support those large organizations, but I would suspect that the majority of the people listening to this broadcast and podcast perhaps work at a small business, and we work with hundreds of thousands of those customers as well. We want to protect everybody. How do we work? Yes. We're the first point of entry for an email into an organization that we protect, and we just filter it. We clean it. We make sure that the bad stuff doesn't get through. I will say that most organizations scratch their head when we tell them that. They think that imposter email, spoofed email, credential phishing email, fake email, they think that that's just a fact of life. And that's just, we all have to live with it.
And maybe that it's not that damaging.
Exactly. They think that, hey, we've lived with this so far.
Yeah.
Why do anything? But the fact is, you don't have to live with it. We can protect that. And that's what we try to do every day.
So ransomware is a trend right now. Does that mean that malware is a bit to the background?
Well, no. In fact, yes, you're right. Not only is ransomware a trend, it's the trend. You know, it's been that way for this year. Mm-hmm. But the bad actors have figured out ways to trick to get ransomware into an organization, and it usually takes multiple stages. Many times starts with an email that somebody clicks. So that does include malware. So your click, that first click, is a very important one to protect.
Because you open the door.
You open the door, right? And that's multi-stage.
Yeah.
So the bad actors have figured out that, okay,
this person is not aware enough, so we can send anything. And he or she will probably click. So that is first getting to know the person.
Right, exactly.
So then you have a door opener.
That's right.
And what's the next stage?
Well, the next stage is behind the scenes. And the next stage, the bad actors, make sure that they see what happens. If somebody clicks, they know they're in, and then they receive the next stage, and they download malicious malware that encrypts files and all the other components that that people are afraid of with ransomware.
Yeah.
So, and then they take on as many of us have heard, they take on the next stage, which is let's get the money.
Yeah. So they are getting into this identity within the network.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. In fact, they receive, they're inside an organization to the point that they actually receive communications on how to, from their own malicious malware that's in the organization, mm-hmm. receive communications on what to do next. And once they've got a foothold and have encrypted files, then, like I said, it's time to
ransom to
to get the money. And they're very good at that. They're very good at that. They have customer service. They have, you can call them and speak to them about how to pay your ransom. They treat you nicely, and they give you all kinds of alternatives on how to pay. But they will hold your hands ransom.
Yeah. Also, the move to cloud is being intensified. We'll talk about that later.
Van hippe start-up tot ijzersterke multinational. Iedereen praat mee op New Business Radio.
And we're back. We were chatting during this song, which was really nice. So let's move on. As we just said, going into the cloud has brought also some challenges. How can you protect that? Or in what way is it more challenging because we're working with the cloud now?
That's a great question. Let's take the big cloud providers, and I'll mention Office 365, which most of the world has migrated to an online, to Office 365 for their email, cloud apps, and business applications, if not G Suite. They're using Google or Microsoft for those. So those are two trends that have happened, and they're not going back. Those are massive trends. We're seeing then, of course, the proliferation of other cloud applications. So, no longer will you work in a data center environment in your company. You'll use a cloud application that's provided by Workday or Salesforce, and all the numerous hundreds of applications that are available. And organizations don't have a good control over that, because users can, buy their own cloud apps and start to use their own cloud apps for business reasons. So getting control of that's one thing, and organizations are concerned about that. But the fact is, the massive cloud adoption of Office 365, for instance, has become a playground for the bad guys. And I'll explain that. For $35 a year, you, as a bad actor sitting on their couch, can become an Office 365 user, mm-hmm. and you buy your subscription just like everybody else, and then you're in, and you're on the same platform,
yes,
that everybody else in the world is.
Yeah,
hundreds of millions of users around the world are on, and that way you're inside the system, and you actually can use that platform to attack, to build your attacks. So we're seeing more of that. What that means, Fabian, is that the bad actors are practicing their tradecraft before they launch it, and they know it will work because they're in the system.
But there's no way to protect yourself from that.
Well, there is. In fact, we do make sure that we look at all of those. Let me step back. So, a bad actor, if I was sending you that email this morning, I really wanted you to click on that malicious URL, I would have hosted that on SharePoint online, mm-hmm. in a very trusted place, or in G Suite. And you would have said, this looks legitimate because it's on SharePoint. It's a Microsoft service or a Google service. So I feel comfortable clicking it.
Yeah.
But it's malicious. Yeah. It's malicious because there's billions of URLs that are in that in those systems and they're not checked. Mm. They can't be checked by those organizations. So what we have to do is we have to check them on the way in the door. So we have to verify that URL before it arrives, and we can.
And that's a technical thing.
That's a technical thing.
Yes, that's exactly. A technical thing. So this early this year, there was the, I don't know how you say that, the quitting of Emotet.
Ah, yes.
Which was, can you explain that?
Yes. In fact, Emotet was, has evolved over the years as the most prolific threat actor in terms of sending out malicious emails. We believe.
So that's an organization.
They're an organization. They're like, the large, they're mafia of malicious, of yeah. malware. And they were sending out, millions and millions of emails per day, sometimes per hour. They were just flooding customers around the world. And all of that stopped earlier this year when there was some arrests made, and it was believed that Emotet is put away. So we saw.
So they were based all over the world.
No, they're based in the organization was centrally held. It was small organization, but with widespread capabilities. So when the leaders were arrested, they Emotet stopped.
Yeah. Is that what Proofpoint does all the time to try to look for those kind of organizations and clear them?
Well, we certainly don't arrest. We're not in the law enforcement component, but we watch the activity of hundreds of threat actors. We have names for all of them. And we, of course, make sure that we see the signatures. We see the telltale signs of a threat actor. And that allows us to stop everything that comes from that threat actor, whether it be in a cloud application or whether it be an email received. So we receive about 20 billion emails a day, which is a massive amount. It's about one-eighth of the world's email we see every day. And what that means is that we see the signatures of bad behavior, and we can stop them.
Yeah. And there are so many, because you have the threat actors, you have the malware, the ransomware, it's all some sort of a maze kind of a network.
Yes.
Would it help if that was exposed all the time?
Well, of course, that's a constant. There's a constant effort, with the law enforcement. In fact, the Dutch authorities have been very active, working with
How is the Benelux doing in this?
Well, I was going to say that the Dutch authorities have been in the news because they're contributing to the the capture and apprehension. And doing well with that. So and of course other governments around the world. I would say that the news that you see in the Benelux is similar to the rest of the world. But I will say that I saw an interesting statistic that 81% of Dutch organizations, the CISOs that we interviewed, felt that their organization was underprepared for a cyber attack. Now.
That's shocking.
Actually. That's shocking, and it's also the highest in Europe.
Wow.
So that's not good.
Not good.
We have to do something about that. Mm-hmm. We have to make sure that CISOs feel that they're better prepared. And one of the reasons they feel this way, Fabian, is because they've seen the shift in landscape, and they know that their people are the new threat, and they're just wondering how to handle that.
Yeah. So you say that it's evolving all the time. The threat actors are always one step ahead inventing new ways. What do you think will be a trend for the next 2 years?
Well, first of all, I think the trend we're seeing now will continue. The threat actors will continue to find more ways to reach individuals. And what we're seeing is that we can identify who those most targeted individuals are. And we do that through, again, seeing all these 20 billion emails a day. So if Fabien is a very attacked person, meaning you receive a lot of these emails, And we also know that you're a high-ranking person in your organization with access to information. And potentially, you know, you have very interesting, you know, access to funds as well. Then we will flag you as a different person, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. We will identify, we think this is a trend that has to continue. We will identify you as what we call a very attacked person. And that means that you're a very important person in your organization. You're a VIP as well, but you're also a VAP. This is a little bit of a term we coined because...
A very attacked person.
And it's different. It's different because I will tell the story about how we came onto this idea because it's really interesting how it evolved, but not everybody in every organization is created equal. Mm. So let me explain. About 3 years ago, maybe four now, Proofpoint started seeing a trend. We started seeing a trend that this one bad threat actor, Russian threat actor, had penetrated and was attacking several of our customers. And, you know, let's say 50 customers. And each of these customers had something in common. They were all publicly traded organizations. And what we noticed was that threat actor was targeting an individual in each of these organizations. And that individual, the common link was they had something in their title. And they were... In their job title, and it was mm-hmm. found on LinkedIn. So all we did was we backtracked and went to LinkedIn. We saw that, wait a minute, all of these people under attack, they have something in common. They say in their title, SEC filing analyst. Security and Exchange Commission in the United States receives a file from every publicly traded company about 2 to 3 days before they announce. Mm-hmm. So the SEC filing analyst, a low-level person, has access to that information several days before it becomes public. And if you have that information before it hits the markets, think of the money you can make.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's exactly what they were doing. So we said, why is this low-level person under, you know, so interesting to this threat actor? And of course, after piecing it together, we warned these companies, first of all, mm-hmm. and they all said the same thing. We had no idea that we should put, you know, a lens on this person in our organization. They're just a low-level person in our organization.
Yeah. So a lot of people lie about their job title or make it more interesting. Are there certain words that you better avoid?
In the Human Factor Report, we do start to surface more titles that are more interesting and departments and companies. So guess which company, you know, guess which ones are the highest ranked and they're low level.
Well, what I see is that a lot of people don't really in their subscription say what their title is. They just describe what they do instead of putting their job title.
But it's easy for a bad actor to find out who is in payroll mm-hmm. or who's in HR or who's in, accounting, you know, payroll accounting. So they can easily target a person who says, you know what? We're going to need the payroll, you know, taxed or the payroll to be paid to this new account, you know, today. So please, and I'm your boss, so you trust me. First of all, you do what I say, you trust me. And I also put a little urgency on there. And in fact, in many cases, that works, right? Money's transferred and the company's lost. So
if you look at the type of companies, I mean, the IT companies obviously might be better equipped or more aware. The more vulnerable companies who really need this are?
Small organizations.
Yeah. And education.
Education and healthcare.
And healthcare.
Yeah, we're seeing, we just did I'm going to pull up a statistic, Fabian, because I think it's relevant. Mm-hmm. And we just published an article because in healthcare, it's a very big problem. And, you know, we're seeing I think we did a check on 69 healthcare organizations in the Netherlands, and we found that only a quarter of them have, you know, only 25% have really put themselves in a position where they're protected.
So low.
And what we know is that they typically understaffed, typically underfunded, and of course they're solving big problems. Right, they're filling hospital beds,
and maybe they're also more open for all those emotional attacks. Therefore,
absolutely, and we also know that they're very susceptible to that because they're busy people.
Yeah,
working in a terrible pandemic, you know, post-pandemic environment. Yeah.
So maybe the government should concern about those kind of companies as well.
You know what? They did. In fact, thankfully, the Dutch government put out a standard, and they're asking each of the healthcare organizations to comply.
Oh, yes, that is wonderful.
Yes, in fact, so we're seeing that, you know, that's the first step, right? And then, but organizations need help. So
yeah,
companies like ours can help.
Okay, we're gonna round this up because I want some real the things that they really can do tomorrow. So tips and tricks coming up.
This is New Business Radio.
I'm sorry, you were giving me the sign for a break.
No, not the break, but that we have to round up because okay. It's almost the end of the hour. Okay, so I was like, let's round it up with some real tips and tricks that they can actually implement tomorrow. What can you do as an organization tomorrow?
Perfect. I got that.
We're on now. You can tell them now.
Sorry about that. My radio skills. So from an organizational perspective, first of all, they should focus on training their people. You know, get a cybersecurity awareness program that's in place that works and that doesn't just happen once a year, but it's layered for the people in your organization and making sure that the very attacked people, as I mentioned, or whoever's more vulnerable, get attention. So get visibility, you know, find out who those people are. So challenge your email service, your security provider to tell you who the right people are to protect, because then you want to put a program in place that make sure those people have special attention. And then finally, what we're seeing with cloud applications, since there's such a proliferation, start to look at your cloud security, take it seriously.
Yeah.
We see those projects starting in the Netherlands, but the ship is sailing. The bad guys are already there. Yep. Make sure that you're protecting your cloud applications and look at different applications, whether it's from Proofpoint or other, but make sure that you're putting that on high on the list.
So do I have to be afraid that I will receive some other mails or SMSs from Proofpoint in the near future?
Today's the last time we're going to do that.
Oh, thankfully. But I will be aware of it. Of course. Jim Cox, thank you very much for waking us up and giving all the tips and share all the information you have.
Thanks, Fabian. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Van hippe start-up tot ijzersterke multinational.
Iedereen praat mee.
Dit is New Business Radio.